All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Jim Fossone.
Welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone, your officer of the deck today. We're glad to be broadcasting once again on WHAM 1600 AM. We have two great stories for you today, one on a Vietnam medic and another on yoga for warriors. Before we get to that, we want to remind you that you can always find and keep in touch with Veterans Radio at veteransradio.net, at our Facebook page. It's also a great place if you want to provide some financial support to this program to reach out and send us some information. Or if you have story ideas, that's the place to stay in contact with Dale and myself. So let's get started. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today Jim Squidrito. Jim spends his time between Rhode Island and Florida. Jim, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Well, thanks, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Well, we're glad to have somebody give us a little perspective, and I think you can bring that to the table. Jim is a Vietnam vet. He was a medic over in Vietnam. But before we get into those experiences and sort of the rest of life, right, let's start with tell us a little bit about your growing up, where you grew up in Rhode Island and your background and getting drafted and getting over to Vietnam. Give us the before story.
Well, as far as my family background, my dad's family came from Palermo, Sicily, and my mom from Rocca Molina, Naples. And the family came over here through Ellis Island, you know, for the American dream. And by some miracle, I don't know, they settled in the smallest state in the Union in Rhode Island. I was very fortunate that I was an athlete and received a athletic scholarship to Bryant University, which is a university in Rhode Island.
Well, and life was really good until the Vietnam War and Uncle Sam came knocking.
Yeah, and you're right. And what happened was, in the summer of 69, I was a fifth-year senior and on my way to basic training.
And this was, you know, common occurrence during that period of time. What maybe isn't a common occurrence is ending up as a Army medic. How did you get there?
Well, I was off to Fort Dix, New Jersey, and I just give you a quick funny story, because when you read my book, there's some times to cry, there's some time to laugh. When I got to boot camp, we were in an auditorium with about 5,000 draftees, and a major got up on the stage, and he said, "You're going to be here a while." He said, "Is there anybody who can entertain the crowd?" So nobody volunteered, and I said, "The heck with this," and I raised my hand because I had done some singing in college. And I went up on a stage, and I sang a song by Tennessee Annie Ford called Big Bad John. So I sang it, and the crowd went crazy, blah, blah, blah. Long story short, the major comes up to me after the everybody was dismissed and said, "I like your style. I like your singing. There's an opening at the officers' club. You may be able to stay here on your tour of duty instead of going to war." He said, "The general's wife's birthday is next week. Her favorite song is I Left My Heart in San Francisco by Tony Bennett." I said, "Well, I can sing it." So the week came. I didn't have any KP or anything. I got up and sang for her birthday. She came up, hugged me. She had tears in her eyes, blah, blah, blah. The general said, "You're in. Your tour of duty is going to be right here at Fort Dix at the officers' club. Go back to the barracks and pack." So I go back there. 2 days later, the major comes to me. He says, "I got bad news. They chose someone else to sing at the officers' club." I said, I thought you told me that I was in. He said, you were my choice, but somebody else chose somebody else higher than me. So he said, good luck on your tour of duty. I said, Major, could you tell me who beat me out? Because you said I was the best. He said, I'm not supposed to tell you this, but the person who beat you out to entertain at the Officers Club was Frank Sinatra Jr. Daddy had made a phone call, and Frank Sinatra Jr. entertained there at Fort Dix, and I was on my way to Vietnam. The very next day, I'm in the parade field, and they're calling out MOSs, what we're going to be in the Army. I had a background in business administration, so I thought I'd be a clerk. So they called my name out, Squadrito, 91 Bravo. So I said, oh, that must be a clerk. The guy next to me said, that's no clerk. You have the worst MOS you could get. You're a combat medic. You fight, and you also have to go out and save lives. He says, you'll probably live for about 6 weeks in Vietnam. That's what was told to me. Now, I thought to myself, why was I chosen combat medic? It dawned on me that my dad was a combat medic in World War II. To make extra money when I was in college, I worked in a hospital. So they must have gathered all that information, and boom, there I was, combat medic.
And we're talking to the author of Dance of the Chameleon, Jim Squadrito. Any way you look at it, that's a unique MOS, and one of the ones that catches everybody on their worst day of their life. You're telling in the book, Dance of the Chameleon is sort of the medic's view of what you saw and what you experienced in Vietnam. We know it's graphic. We know it's not comfortable to talk about. But Jim, can you give us a little insight as to why you wrote the book and how those experiences shaped?
Yeah, and just a sideline. From Fort Dix, I went to Fort Sam Houston for medical training. It was supposed to be 16 weeks of medical training. After 6 weeks, they met with us and said there was a shortage of medics. And after 6 weeks, not 16, they gave us orders to go to Vietnam. We trained on no bodies. The only training we had for suturing was sewing two towels together, and for inoculations, injecting oranges. That was it. Most of the training was how to low crawl under wire with a full backpack, medical supplies, and an M16.
It is almost incomprehensible that that would have been the extent of the training, but then again, we are talking about the Army way.
And we're talking about Vietnam, and unfortunately, it was a tough time, and there were so many people, as I said, medics. There was a price on a medic's head in Vietnam of $25 if the Viet Cong or North Vietnamese killed a medic, because the morale of the unit would go down if the medic was killed. That's why so many medics were being killed in Vietnam.
You obviously didn't have a whole lot of medical training going in, and got tossed into the meat grinder of Vietnam. Tell us, as I asked, if you can, tell us why you wrote this book.
Well, I didn't talk about the war for 40 years. But I had found out that there were 37 veterans every day who contemplate suicide and 22 of them who actually do it. A friend of mine who had written several books said, why don't you tell your story? Because your story is survival. You picked yourself up, you dusted yourself off, and you started all over again. This would inspire veterans to take the step forward and not a step backwards. And so I wrote that to save veterans' lives who are contemplating. And that's where I went. After I wrote the book, I started doing presentations and book signings and talking about that. So that was my main reason for writing the book.
And the book discusses, all of the horrors of war that anyone would have experienced, but also that a medic had to experience, which was I guess, unique and different in its own way, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I served in three venues in Vietnam. The first one was probably the worst. It was a front-line aid station where we took bodies off of helicopters. Sometimes there was three bodies on one stretcher. What bothered me, a few things, a lot of the officers in the military, when they came in to check how many of their people were killed, one of their main concerns was how many of the enemy that we killed. There was a big thing about body count. If you remember watching TV, they'd say, well, 500 Americans were killed, but we killed 5,000 Viet Cong. That really bothered me a lot, that they were only interested in the body count. So that was one thing that that really bothered me. A couple other things that I observed, drug addiction was ridiculous. Heroin was the drug of the day, and many of the servicemen were addicted, buying it on the black market, and some of it was tainted with battery acid. I was standing by when autopsies were done, and they actually found battery acid in some of the systems of some of these individuals that died from the heroin. 6-year-old boys and girls were selling drugs, pot and heroin, and it just was unbelievable. So there was also that was during the time of the Martin Luther King marches, and there was unrest between blacks and whites that I observed. So I was lucky as a medic because everybody counted on me if they get hurt or shot, and so I try to be a peacemaker between those sides. So those were a lot of things that bothered me when I was there.
Well, and as our military men and women have to experience, you get overseas, you get in combat, and you also find out that the corporate culture in the country you're in may be exceedingly different than what we're used to in the United States. In Afghanistan, the issue with young boys, but in Vietnam, you write about the sex trade that was going on that, again, would have been shocking to anybody coming out of the United States as a draftee into the service.
Yeah, you know, that's another thing in the book, and I'm kind of, you know, I never put myself as a hero in a book when you read it. I was kind of ashamed of myself to get involved. Some of these young girls were 12 and 13 years old, but the culture there is a lot of these girls are married at 12 and 13 years old. That's not an excuse. It's something I have to live with in my life and ask for forgiveness to get even involved in that. But that was certainly another thing that really bothered me. And I served 5 months at that frontline aid station. And then I got papers to move to the DMZ. So, which, because 6 medics had been killed there within a span of 2 weeks, and because I was one of the newest people in country, I was sent to the DMZ shortly after.
Yeah, that's never a good sign, is it, when you get that and the reason for it, and has to create all kinds of trepidation going in. But let's move out of Vietnam a little bit here, because really the story of Dance of the Chameleon is about not just the what you experienced in the service, but also about how it impacted you and how you had to work your way through that. Talk to us a little bit about how it impacted you, and then we'll talk about how you moved through it.
It impacted me coming back to the United States or being there in Vietnam?
Coming back to the United States.
Yeah. Well, you know, just the end of my tour in Vietnam, I was kind of numb. And things that I saw, death, didn't bother me, and that was the worst thing that happened to me, because I just didn't care anymore. Every day, I didn't know if it was my last day. So when I received my papers to come home, I flew into Logan Airport, and there was demonstrations waiting for the military planes to come in. They threw garbage at us. They accused us of being warmongers. I was suffering severely from rashes from Agent Orange. The military told me I was flying helicopters, spraying for malaria, when in real terms I was spraying Agent Orange and didn't even know it, from helicopters. We went there weeks later and there was no trees and nothing growing. So I've had an ongoing problem with Agent Orange. I have some PTSD. I try to block things from my mind. I was suicidal. I couldn't get a job. I went through 10 or 12 jobs. I was lonely, despondent, depressed, suicidal. And I just wanted to end it all.
And your friends and family had to be thinking, this isn't the guy we knew.
No, it wasn't. As I said, I became numb. I couldn't think straight. The best thing I did is I did go back at night school and finish my degree in business administration. So I did that, which made me feel a little bit good about myself. So I needed something to pick me up. And what had happened was, and I call this a miracle. I still don't know how this happened, but it was 1978. I had gone through 7 years of depression, and it was the great blizzard of 78 in New England. Overnight, we got 3 feet of snow. Cars were stranded on Route 95, where helicopters had to take them out of the highway. People were sleeping in firehouses, in the bottom of schools. I was all alone in an apartment that my friend of mine was letting me use. My parents were ready to lose their house. I had no place to go, and I was on the edge of ending it all. When somebody in the snow hit my window with a rock, I opened the window of the apartment, and two gentlemen were down below, nicely dressed, and asked if they could use the phone because their car was stranded in the snow. I allowed them to come up. They sat down, made the phone call, and then talked to me and asked me to give them my story. And I told them that I was a Vietnam vet, couldn't hold a job. I was a little down on myself. And one of the gentlemen said, "You know, I see something in you," he said. "I want you to go to this interview in 2 weeks. And you go there and let's see what happens." They left and he took off. I didn't even get his name. So I wrote down the address of the interview and I threw it in a pile somewhere. 2 weeks comes. I have no car and I find this little note with the address on it. Something inside of me said, "Go, what have you got to lose?" I hitchhiked 50 miles to this interview. I go in, there's 50 people in there for one job with 3M Company. Guy next to me's got 5 years experience selling, another guy's got 10 years experience. I have none. They call my name, I go in, I say, "Look, I don't wanna waste your time. I have no experience. I don't know what I'm doing here. Something told me to come to this interview." I give him my application. I'm ready to leave it. And the guy said, "Whoa, whoa, whoa." He said, "Are you Jim Squadrito?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "When can you start?" I said, "What do you mean, when can I start?" He said, "When the executive vice president of 3M Company tells us to hire somebody, we hired him. The guy in the snow was John Friswall, Executive Vice President of 3M.
And how long did you end up spending with 3M, Jim?
30 years. I ended up as National Account Manager for them. And towards the end of my career, I ended up at 9/11. That was probably a bigger war than Vietnam for me, seeing that we were attacked in our own country. I was in Maine at a boat builder, Bath Iron Works, and I got the call to immediately get into New York City with my team of 12 guys. And we were there hours after the planes hit and set up at ground zero safety procedures for New York City because they were ill prepared for that kind of situation. And that almost hurt me more than Vietnam, seeing that we were attacked at 9/11. I spent a couple of weeks at ground zero.
In 3M products, safety products, would have been used by all the first responders involved at 9/11. So just
respirators, air tanks, the city didn't have enough. The fire department had them, but the police and responders didn't. There are still people dying from respiratory ailments from 9/11, still today, because they ran into the pile as good people to save people, but they were ill-prepared and they're dying from respiratory ailments. We were sent in to make sure that they had the proper protection.
Well, you know, if you believe in God, God puts you in the right place a couple of times. One being generous enough to let some strangers walk in and make a phone call. Enough providence moved you forward to say, hey, get to that interview even if you have to hitchhike. And obviously, right guy, right spot on 9/11 when it was necessary to provide those services and equipment to first responders. Jim, as you look back at this, and this is why we really have you on, it's not so much about the book Dance of the Chameleon, which you can find on Amazon, but we're talking to Jim Squadrito really because I asked you to look back and reflect on all of these experiences and the advice that you might give to a veteran today who maybe finds himself in the position you were in or some portion of the position you were in back in the day.
Well, I'm hoping that this book and potential movie will help in some small measure my Vietnam brothers and all servicemen and women who have felt as useless as I have on many occasions, to know that there is hope. There is redemption for them as well. You know, we're all here with God-given gifts. Don't destroy them by destroying your lives and also destroying the lives of family and friends. And, you know, I went through therapy, psychological situations, and also some spiritual things in the book that I can't explain. So I'm just saying, when you get this feeling of depression, talk to somebody who's been through it. You know, read my book if you can. If you have any questions, I'm certainly, you can get me at my email address. I don't know if you have that.
Yes, it's jrsquadrito@gmail.com.
Yeah, anybody who needs me to talk to them, I do this all the time. And I get calls and emails from a lot of individuals having trouble, not just from Vietnam. I've even had people from the Korean War call me. I've had people from certainly Iraq, Afghanistan, who are having problems. So I'm readily available. If anybody needs to contact me, I'm there for you.
Well, I think it's helpful not only for the veterans, but for family and friends to understand, don't give up on this guy. Maybe all he needs is one break. And I suspect that that's one of those things that you've tried to pass along through life now, having gotten a few extra breaks after service. And would you agree with me that we need to keep encouraging friends and families and strangers? Hey, give them that one break.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. You know, with this a percentage of anything from the book and a movie is going back to returning veterans and their families. Because you make a point, the family is so important in helping these veterans come back to life again. And so that's what we're trying to do with this, with the book and the movie. And if anyone wants to get involved in the movie, which I think is going to help countless people, they can email me if they want to have anything to do with the making of it. That's great with me. We have people in Hollywood looking at it right now. But again, that's not my, that's not the number one priority of me talking with you today, Jim. Certainly it's to save some lives of those people who are contemplating suicide.
And we really appreciate, Jim Squidrito, that you're taking some time to talk to us today on Veterans Radio to tell your story, which is one of hope and redemption. And the pearl of wisdom or the message you're giving of don't give up on the gifts that what you've got. One break may change everything in your life. So, Jim, thank you for your time today talking to Veterans Radio.
Thank you very much for giving me the time to talk to my brothers and all the veterans out there. God bless you all. There's something for you. You're put here for a reason. Don't end it. You've been given gifts. Don't throw those gifts away. God bless you all. Thank you, Jim.
A medic's view of Vietnam with some great wisdom. Stick around after the news for more from Veterans Radio. Welcome back on Veterans Radio. We want to thank our sponsors, the Vietnam Veterans of America, Charles Kettle Chapter 310 in Ann Arbor, Michigan, the American Legion Post 46 in Ann Arbor, VFW Post Graf O'Hara 423, and of course, U.S. Wings and Legal Help for Veterans. Let our sponsors know that you heard about them on Veterans Radio and that they and you want to continue to support veteransradio.net.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
So let's hear about trauma-conscious yoga from Judy Weaver, a longtime yoga teacher. She's married to an Air Force veteran. She started teaching a U.S. Army Ranger who had ALS about yoga and breathing and body presence. And this has grown into a passion, a 501c3 that reaches around the world teaching yoga on active duty bases and to veterans. You're really going to be amazed by this. Stick around. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today Judy Weaver. She is the co-founder and director at Connected Warriors. Judy, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hi, glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's an interesting program that you're involved in. We've spoken to folks in the past who have used yoga as part of their recovery therapy from maybe some military experiences, but I think you've taken it to a whole new level, and certainly as an organization, it's really blossomed. So, but let's start with, Judy, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So I've been teaching and practicing yoga for probably over almost 30 years, and I'm a yoga teacher and I'm a yoga therapist, and for me, I found yoga by happenstance. I took a class in college a million years ago, and it wasn't my thing back then. I come from a dance background, so I was always about the body, moving. And I had been ill for about a year and a half and I had a parasite, so I was bedridden. And my girlfriend, as I started to feel better, she drugged me to a yoga class, and it happened to be an Ashtanga yoga class. So if you know anything about the yoga world and the different lineages, it's that one that's it really started out power yoga and the vinyasa yoga kind of craze here that we see. And it was designed really for young boys. So it's I find typically type A individuals go to that route. It's very physical. And it really healed me. So I had time in late 1990s, we were in San Francisco, my husband and I, and I decided I would learn more about this practice. So I did a teacher training in It's Yoga. And it really changed my life because I really didn't think I would teach. I was just wanting to learn more. And I started a little opportunity in San Francisco to bring yoga to underserved kids, at-risk youth. And I found then how hard it was to give stuff away. So that was kind of the start of this. And I've just studied with teachers and different functional movement authorities and orthopedic surgeons and chiropractors and doctors all about how to understand how the body moves and operates. And that's kind of my path to yoga therapy.
Well, certainly over the couple of decades or more that you've been involved, you've seen society accept the concept of yoga more and the value of yoga more. And we see athletes doing it and certainly dancers. But the transition into the military or veteran community is a little bit different. And yeah. I suspect that was a little challenging. But you actually ran into a veteran who had an Army Ranger who had an ALS diagnosis.
Yes.
And tell us a little bit about how that moved you into maybe yoga could be helpful to the military and the veteran community.
Yes, so in 2007, I teach her in Boca Raton, Florida, and a young man literally walked into the studio I teach at, and he said he was recently separated from the Army, 5 tours in the Middle East, and as a Ranger, and his mom knew something was wrong with him, so he, when he came back, they went down to the Miami VA, and he got diagnosed with ALS. And originally I said, well, I know what ALS is, but I don't understand how it'll manifest with yoga. I'll do the research. And I did. And I did the Google thing, and I spoke to my husband, who is an Air Force veteran, but during the Cold War, the early 80s, so he dealt with nothing like these young men and women are now. And he asked me the question. He said, so you see the outcome of this disease, are you sure you want to work with this young man? And I told him I have no reason other than I feel compelled to do so. And it was that I worked with Bo and his family for over 2.5 years until he passed. And what I saw, as I mentioned earlier, my practice at that time was really pretty much Ashtanga. And what I found is within the first 6 months, his body, he was no longer had the ability to move as he did before. And so it was all of the other softer sides of this practice that I had to bring to the table, as we call, drag that toolkit out and provide those tools for him and his family. And they got through this whole piece without any of them really going into depression. So that I saw quite remarkable. And it was that, working with Bo and the family, as well as seeing the movie The Hurt Locker. And seeing the movie with my husband, we left the theater, and I turned to him and I told him, I said, okay, that's upside down. They're more present in chaos than they are in peace, and I can fix that. And I reached out to a gentleman named Ralph Iovino, a Vietnam veteran and Marine, who I had taught a few years before that to be a yoga teacher. And I asked Ralph, I said, Ralph, you bring me veterans, I'll teach free classes. And that's what started us in 2010.
Well, I think it's the open heart and open mind that you brought to this, and that those who come to you have the same, that they're willing to try something new, something different, that maybe will provide them some relief or some better control of their situation. Were you surprised that veterans took a liking or felt compelled to stay with yoga?
You know, if you go back and you do the research about yoga in itself, it's, you know, an ancient practice and science that's been around for thousands of years. And if you look back into India, the Maharajas hired those crazy yogi people to teach their military troops because they were able to stay focused, they had flexibility, and they had strength. Those are the main reasons why. So in this perspective that that yogis are different than warriors, they're actually the same. They just speak a different language. And there's a text called the Bhagavad Gita, and it really is at the heart. And I've had several, especially the younger veterans, I've had several of them actually tell me, why didn't the military give me that book to read? Because if I had read that, I might have had a different perspective related to some moral injuries and, as we know, the survival guilt piece and, you know, all of the emotional aspects that happens when you go to war. So I think that for me, I have a way of explaining it to a veteran and an active duty, because we're in both places, that they can understand this is the same thing. This is like your PT, but even better. The whole goal is to be resilient in life and to be able to fluctuate from being in that fight, flight, freeze, as well as going back to the rest and digest. And I use a lot of analogies when I talk to veterans and to service members so that they can understand this is not woo-woo stuff. This is real, and this is about how your body and mind work together.
And it's really more than just the flexibility it might give you. You really are working on that mindfulness piece, and that, I suspect, is what's very attractive to the service members and veteran population.
Yeah, you know, it has everything to do with our nervous system. To me, the state of being of an individual and their health has everything to do with how resilient their nervous system is. And, you know, when I look at and talk to some of these veterans that have had 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 deployments, the body, when it has to deal with that, it creates these new normals, I call them. And their new normal is to live in that space, and they do not feel comfortable coming back stateside and being, quote, in rest and digest. They just want to go back over there because that's their comfort zone. I call it the trauma groove, and there's a few aspects related to what is involved in that, and it just changes their new normal. And so our goal is the thought that I'll give you a quick analogy. So when you're born, if you imagine you're this clay ball, and this clay ball consists of everything of your heredity, everything in your parents and your ancestors, everything that's ever happened to them, and that comes into this clay ball. And as you live your life, you create this clay pot. Everybody is an individual clay pot. And things start happening in this. And so you might have a trauma groove, childhood stuff, middle teenage, whatever that might be. And this clay pot continues creating those grooves, which could be traumatic events. It could be hyper awareness of your senses, whatever that might be. And then imagine you put this clay pot into deployments. And here's the thing. This clay pot of our body mind doesn't really fully solidify until you're about 29 years old. And 2/3 of our younger population after post 9/11, they were under 29 years old. So at the time you're about 29, the clay pot is now, imagine, you put it in the kiln and fire it. So out comes now this beautiful clay pot, but it's hardened edges. And so the trauma groove, which is that place we go back to time and again when we're stressed, imagine that. And if you take an approach that just bangs it out with a hammer and chisel, you'll break the clay pot. What trauma-conscious yoga is designed to do is be the finest sandpaper known to man and just simply smooth those edges until the edges become smoother and you can shift out of the groove. And so that groove becomes smaller and smaller until the groove is pretty flat, and then you are living life happier.
Well, I want to go back to that terminology because I think it's somewhat mm-hmm. unique to Connected Warriors, and that is
yes.
trauma-conscious yoga.
Yes.
Again, tell us 100%. What that means to your program.
So we take the perspective that no one's broken and we don't have to fix anybody. Trauma is anything that overwhelms the body's ability to cope. That's it. PTS, because we choose to not call it a disorder, because that puts people in a box and they identify with that. What PTS is, post-traumatic stress, that's the natural, biological, physiological event to a body, mind, after a traumatic event. That's it. And so because of that, if you hold that chronically, it can become psychological. But it starts out being the cells. Every cell of your body's got the trauma in it. If you can dissipate that, if you can redirect that, there won't be the PTS because of that piece. Now, let's say you do have PTS and you're dealing with that. What trauma-conscious yoga does, it creates a safe and secure environment that you can feel and make choices that will create a more resilient nervous system. You can create space between your thoughts. You're consciously breathing and adding movement and concentration to that, which is the only way into your nervous system. That's the key, understanding how you can get into your nervous system to change it. Imagine this, if you were in the animal kingdom, right, and you're a gazelle and a lion's chasing you, every system in that gazelle's body, other than the one that gets them to safety, shuts off immediately. And the gazelle, its only job is to be to survive and to get to safety. Once that gazelle is safe, immediately every other ancillary system turns back on. And the gazelle's happy, happy, and it eats, and everything is good, joy, joy, until a lion chases it again. Well, here, us human beings, we no longer have that auto switch to turn back on. And so when we are in fight flight, we can have the tendency to stay there. And what trauma-conscious yoga is, it provides an individual that switch, a manual switch, turn on, go back into rest and digest, because know the body has one goal, and that is survival. And that automatic switch to fight-flight will turn on whether you want to or not.
Well, right now I can hear some veteran radio listeners going, wait a minute, she told me this wasn't just foo-foo, woo-woo stuff. And we're talking to Judy Weaver, who's the founder of founder of Connected Warriors, trauma-conscious yoga. And I want to bring in that this whole idea of yoga therapy has had studies at medical centers and at VA centers around the country. Can you tell us a little bit about that to maybe ground this for those listeners who are skeptical?
Yeah, 100%. So we've had two studies that we've completed. One is down here at Nova Southeastern, and it was the first study to verify the efficacy, to test the efficacy of this practice and our specific protocol on both the physiological and the psychological components of a mind-body and with veterans. And what they determined is it is very beneficial. It connects the mind-body back together because trauma breaks that connection, and that's why that's a trigger, let's call it, right? You get triggered. The other study we did is at UCSD, University of California, San Diego, and that study was to test the efficacy of this program with low back pain and PTS. There's a direct correlation they have found with low back pain, L3, L4, L5, S1. And what happens with that is the body, again, come back to it has one job, and that's literal survival. Now, the mind can cognitively muscle through and go past that and create and do all sorts of things, and that's what our warriors are taught to do. You have a mission. You're going to achieve the mission come hell or high water. So, but that can take a toll on the physical body mind. And so with low back pain, what happens when you get into a stressful situation, the psoas muscles actually move into flexion. So think about that. You fold over at your belly, right? And that is to protect the pelvic abdominal brain, so to speak. That's your part of your primitive system of your body. From that perspective, because there's Davis laws of writing, which means we walk on 2 feet, our eyes have to see the horizon. What happens there is immediately the back erector muscles, the spinal erectors, go into extension because it has to pull our head back up so we can see horizon. Long-term effect is the compression of the lumbar spine, and there is the damage that happens in L3, L4, L5. So there's a physiological side of trauma.
And again, there has been some solid research done on the correlation of the value here.
And the other thing I'd
say to our skeptical veteran radio listeners who maybe never thought of yoga as a pathway for them is you're also doing these programs, I think it's at something like 14 active duty military installations and 30 VA medical centers and clinics. And folks, we all know DOD and VA aren't into fluff.
You know, 100% correct. And I call yoga, to me, because I'm working to take the stigma out of it, especially with, you know, this population. It simply means your own growth and awareness. That's it. There is no woo-woo. We keep that aspect out of it. This is pure, literally, concentration, focus on your breath, movement. That's it. Nothing else.
And those who are teaching your Connected Warriors trauma conscious training is required.
100%. And there's a lot of other organizations out there who provide training and in this space, and they have started their organizations with the training aspect to generate funding. So we took it the other way. Our training is to support our classes. So our biggest classes right now are actually in Afghanistan and Iraq. We have classes, and they are well attended, and they ask us for more. If I had more active duty teachers, we would have more classes.
So that's what I wanted to turn to next, and that is just the broad, amazingly broad reach that Connected Warriors has. It's a 501c3, and you can tell from Judy's discussion, she is both knowledgeable and passionate about the value this brings to the military and veteran population. But what, again, you know, many of these 501c3s we talk to are pretty, you know, small reaches. You've got a tremendous reach. Tell us how that reach came about and where folks might be able to get involved.
Right. So we're in 24 states, 8 countries. We don't have classes in 8 countries actively all the time because it's active duty instructors who have to be there, or contractors if they're a certified teacher. You know, honestly, our first foray out of South Florida was a call I got from Kentucky. A teacher, a professor at Murray State University reached out because her aunt lives down in South Florida and saw the article in the newspaper and said, you need to reach out to these people. And we just went. We went there. We went to Fort Campbell. We got on base. We met with the MWR people. We actually have had classes ongoing since I started this in 2010. Since 2011, we have had classes ongoing at Fort Campbell in special ops ever since then. I just didn't stop. When somebody said, can we have a class? I would get on, my husband has funded this for the most part when we first started. And I had a few other of my private clients who I talk about this all the time. And they would fund a trip. I went with a veteran and our executive director back then. And we would just go and show up. And we do this with volunteer yoga teachers all over the world. It's pretty remarkable. At the base of yoga is seva, and that means service. And whoever those people are out in the world, they say the happiest people in the world are those who believe in something beyond themselves and who provide service. And so for us in the yoga world, it's pretty straightforward to provide this service. What's interesting, though, is the we look at 100 million people in the United States that we have at our at that we would serve as far as our demographic. 22 million veterans, 3 million active duty reservists, National Guard, and 60 to 80 million family members. It's interesting to see that how many of these yoga teachers, there is some sort of connection to the military in their history, and they want to serve. And that's what's made this remarkable. I did these trainings for free of charge all over the country for many years as we started to create structure and infrastructure within the organization. I normally don't do the trainings much anymore, and we have a couple other trainers who do this. If you want to get involved, reach out to our website, connectedwarriors.org, and put an inquiry. If you know somebody, in a yoga teacher, a space, our spaces are all donated also by yoga studios, by community centers. We're in vet centers and VA hospitals. We're in local hospitals. And it's just, to me, I love that the citizens of this country are stepping up and giving back.
Well, it's an amazing growth story. I think it demonstrates that it's being effective. It's something that, again, maybe others, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, it wouldn't have caught on and been supported this way. But the fact that the yoga instructors are volunteering their time and helping, and people are making space available, I mean, I think all of that adds to this is a service, not a profit center.
100%. I take no money from this organization, and I have never taken any pay for this. This is truly something that I believe is necessary, and I think it is. I'm just honored to be able to provide that. I would like to put out there for all the veterans in active duty who might be listening and still think yoga is woo-woo. Just think of it this way. The maximum strength of a muscle only comes after you've achieved maximum length of a muscle. So the flexibility component is huge in creating strength and functionality in your physical body.
So what would you say to that person who's not ventured into yoga before, who's heard this Judy Weaver of Connected Warriors and said, yeah, maybe I should look into it? I think this first step is often the scariest step. So could you help somebody with that first step?
So, the first step is check out the VA hospital and the vet center nearest you. If you're a combat veteran, the vet center is probably a great place to go to start. See if they have a yoga class on their schedule. Talk to your therapist. Go to the VA hospital that you go to, see if they have yoga on their schedule. Begin there, because those are the places where you're definitely surrounded with your comrades. In our community classes, there will be family members, so that may not feel quite as comfortable for you. And also, I know that it's weird to walk into a yoga studio it just can be a weird thing. Stepping aside from the military, there's civilians out there who are afraid to step into a yoga studio. They just are. And so it's not special in that perspective. It might be a little bit more so that warriors are maybe not wanting to go in there. That's really step one. You can go to our website. We're working on putting some videos on there.
Let's remind everybody what your website is, Judy Weaver.
Yes, it's connectedwarriors.org.
And we want to direct our veteran radio listeners to that website where you can find out where there are Connected Warrior programs. She mentioned there's about 24 states. But you can also help the program out by donating to this 501c3 there on the website, and yoga instructors or teachers can also volunteer on that website. So, we want to direct you to connectedwarriors.org. Judy Weaver, we really appreciate you taking some time with us on Veterans Radio today and educating our listeners about this excellent program.
Well, thank you for having me, and have a great day.
Well, I hope that both of these programs kind of opened your eyes, or at least opened your ears, about things that are happening in the veteran community. I think Jim Squidito's book, Dance of the Chameleons, A Vietnam Medic's View, is something you should look at, and obviously Connected Warriors is something that you should go to their website and see if you can support them, as well as veteransradio.net. And until next time, when Dale is back, you are dismissed.